Good morning. I am joined from the University of Minnesota by Mary Meyer. Mary, good morning to you.
Good morning, Denny. It feels like a little bit like fall out
there.
It
really
does.
We were mentioning that earlier this morning. It is kind of a fresh feeling and a little breezy, too. But, well, we know it's around the corner. But I don't know about your neighborhood, but, boy, we sure could have used a lot more rain than we got.
Yes, I only had a tenth of an inch in my rain gauge this morning, so we were all hoping for more rain.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to have another chance tomorrow night. Let's see what kind of amounts we're talking about by then. If you happen to have any kind of a lawn or garden question, we're going to be taking them by text only today. And Mary, I can say, we hope next Saturday we'll open up the phone lines, brand new phone lines too. But in the meantime, it's text only, and we're already getting those. So any kind of a lawn or garden question, and if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we get. So don't wait. Send Mary your text at 651-989-9226. And, of course, a little bit later on, we'll explore the arboretum, as we like to do as well. I was noticing, Mary, that at least in our yard, our backyard, my tomato plants – and the our cucumber plants, they look like they've, well, it looks like they've seen better days. It looks like it's almost September, if you know what I mean.
Yes, some of our plants, tomatoes especially, will start to go through senescence, or that's really normal aging this time of year, especially if they have already set a lot of fruit. Many times fruit set in and of itself will cause a plant to quit flowering and, you know, just produce the fruits that are already on the plant. And so, yes, and I think the drought conditions, even though as gardeners we're trying our best to keep things watered, it's harder when there isn't enough water. But this is actually kind of a good year for tomatoes. If you've been able to water them, there's been less disease pressure on tomatoes, and they're notorious for getting a lot of foliage blights, septoria, early and late blight. And those are not that bad this year. So many people have told me they've had a nice harvest of tomatoes, but not all of our crops have fared so well because we certainly could use more water.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've had good luck with the tomatoes as well. So there's a good reason for that. Here's a text, Mary, that says, this year, I had much better luck, speaking of it, growing cherry tomatoes and green peppers in pots set right in the garden rather than soil. For next year, do I need to completely change out the potting soil, or can I simply add new fertilizer to the containers?
You can reuse potting soil that's in a container. I've done that for years. As long as the plants are healthy and there's not a lot of disease foliage that fell into the pot, I clean up my pots, especially the tomatoes, when fall comes and the plants are no longer bearing or it's become the frost has hit, and then leave the pots without plants in them. So any diseased plants or any previous year's plants, clean those up. But yes, you can reuse containers, the soil that's in a container.
Yeah, I'm thinking ahead of that as well, because all my plants were in containers this year. What's the best way to clean those out, not only in the fall, but certainly next spring when we start planting again? What kind of material do we use to make sure it's clean?
Well, what I do is get my wheelbarrow out, or a large something that's large, a tarp or something, and I actually dump the soil out of the pots in the spring, and then I aerate that soil. I mix it up and see what it feels like. Usually it's pretty much okay to reuse it again. You just have to aerate it. It gets quite compacted, and so taking it out of the pot. I don't usually re-clean my pots. It really depends a lot on the disease pressure and what, if you've had a problem with diseases, then it is a good idea to clean your pots out. I'd start with new soil if I had had a lot of disease problems. But if you have minimal disease problems, I mostly aerate the soil. Sometimes I need to increase it and I add additional potting soil, or I add soil from my garden. I use some garden soil, potting soil, sometimes some sand, a perlite or vermiculite, to aerate the soil to give it more air spaces and make it lighter.
Well, I can see what I'll be doing next year now. Okay, good. This texter, Mary, says, I water my dahlias frequently, fertilize every 2 weeks, plenty of sun, but they're only 1 foot tall. What do you think?
I think it's the kind of dahlia that you got. There are a lot of new dahlias on the market, and I actually have some in my window boxes, and they're only about 8 or 10 inches tall. I was at the University of Colorado State University and looked at their dahlia trials, and all the dahlias were under 2 feet that were in those trials. And these are new dahlias that are being grown from cuttings. So this is like a whole new ball game for people who are used to the dahlias that were the tubers grown from cuttings. So this is like a whole new ball game for people who are used to the dahlias that were the tuberous roots that we kept from year to year. So you really have to be careful in what kind of a dahlia you're buying, because a lot of them are bred to just be small, more bedding plants, and they don't get tall.
Here's a question a lot of us may have. How long can grass stay dormant?
Grass stay dormant. Oh, this is, first I thought we were talking about grass seed, but no, grass in and of itself. Well, we think a month is about it.
Uh-oh.
So, and that's pushing it. So it depends on a lot of factors. So we know that the crowns of Kentucky bluegrass will be dormant for a few weeks, 3-4 weeks, but after that they can actually die. So we saw that in the drought of 1988, I think it was the last time we had it so dry for so long. So if you have a lawn that's been brown for a month, you might want to consider watering it. The other thing you have to keep in mind is what are your city restrictions for watering, because most all cities have a restriction on of odd even or certain times of the day and so on. And watering in the morning, early in the morning, is usually okay on certain days in most cities, but you need to check that out.
Yeah, check the restrictions. All right, Mary, we need to take a break, but we have more show to come. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, by the way, Smart Garden is around every Saturday here on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour. Here's the text number, 651-989-9226, to ask Mary your question. 651-989-WCCO. We will take this break. Be right back. In the Twin Cities, 66 degrees. Stay with us. And a good Saturday morning to you. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering your lawn and garden questions here in our Smart Garden Show. And as usual, Mary, we have many questions. And via text today, again, it's 651-989-9226. Mary, here's one. It says they have beautiful hydrangeas this year, growing very well. 2 weeks ago, texter noticed an insect they've never encountered before going for the plants. They believe they are thrips. Are they harmful is the first question. They've implied insecticidal soap that seems to be working. But question is, two, any other suggestions to control these pests?
I think insecticidal soap is a good option. The only other option would be to use water spray itself to try to dislodge the thrips. We do see insects, because of the dry weather, attacking different plants or feeding on different plants. We see a lot of wildlife feeding on our plants, looking for sources of water. So thrips are not that, they're a very common insect. And I would say that what you're doing is great. And unless you see more signs of more thrips and more activity, I think you should be fine with what you're doing.
All right, good. Another tomato question. Is it safe to eat those misshapen tomatoes I am getting? Some even have holes in the bottom of them.
Yes, they are usually fine to eat. Holes in the bottom usually indicate an insect, a bird or something. A squirrel might be trying to eat it again, looking for a source of water. If you cut that portion of it off, that's usually okay. The other hole in the bottom can be blossom end rot. We're seeing a lot of that this summer because of the drought conditions, and that's a water imbalance that happens with tomatoes. And there again, you can cut that portion of the tomato off.
Text number again, 651-989-9226. Your lawn and garden question from Mary Meyer. This texter says this, Mary, they have a paper wasp infestation in their milkweed. This has never happened to them before. They want to know, how can I protect the monarch larvae and get rid of the wasp? There is no obvious nest in the area. They seem to live on the milkweed.
I'm not sure that I would try to get rid of those paper wasps. First of all, I'd really make sure that you identify the insect and know what it is. And we have good resources online for that. But it's really hard to kill one insect and not another, especially when you're talking about treating it on an individual plant. So the wasps that you see could be good pollinator insects as well. And there are not many insects. Well, there are some insects that feed exclusively on milkweed, but it's thought to be a toxic plant for many insects. So I think the paper wasps are there mostly for the pollen. And I would just kind of tolerate them if you can, because I think in the long run, it's better to tolerate them than try to kill off some insects, because you might kill off the beneficials as well.
Yeah, that's a trade-off. Good morning. This one says, is it safe to prune dwarf burning bushes now or wait? Love the program.
Well, normally I would say it's probably okay, but you know, the drought is so severe on many of our plants right now that really you shouldn't really be stressing them out further by pruning. Pruning can remove some of the foliage, and right now plants really need all the resources that they have to continue to live. So if it was my plant, unless it's a dead, diseased branch, I would put off the pruning until later this fall.
Okay. Here's a lawn question, Mary. Pigweed. How do I get rid of it in my lawn?
Yeah, why is it these weeds seem to be able to tolerate the drought more than our plants that we love? Pigweed is, yes, a common, it's actually an annual weed, and there are a couple different plants that are referred to as pigweed. And the broadleaf weed killers will take care of that. Again, this is a stressful time to be using herbicides when most of our lawns are somewhat drought stressed. There's also a threshold for chemical activity in hot weather. Many times above 80, 85 degrees, herbicides have a more damaging effect, and sometimes they don't work at all. So in cooler weather, you can use a broadleaf weed killer to control pigweed. You could also use a pre-emergence herbicide early in the spring will kill the seeds and the seedlings, and that's another preventative way.
Okay. Before we take a break for weather, Mary, this one is kind of related. Can I use Roundup on large beds of ferns?
Gosh, I assume you want to kill those ferns.
Well,
so
guess.
Many people are trying to plant ferns, but yes, Roundup will kill ferns. Maybe this person has the Matusia, the big ostrich fern, which has rhizomes and takes over an area. I personally love that fern. I've got it in difficult sites in my on my garden. But Roundup, yes, will kill that. The only thing I will say is that it's got to be green tissue. And some ferns right now are already starting to decline with the drought or the fall coming on. And if it's brown or yellow tissue, the fern is not going to take up that chemical nearly as well. So it has to be green, actively growing for it to work.
All right. Let's do this, Mary. We've got another half hour of the show to go here on CCO. We're going to have a look at that forecast. Text number is, for your lawn and garden question, 651-989-9226. Mary Meyer answering your questions. Mary from the U of M. And we'll be back with the forecast in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to the help you get from Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota helping you out today via text 651-989-9226. And Mary, as usual, we have no shortage of text questions for you. But especially when you and your colleagues are on, we always like to bring up the topic of the Arboretum. It is such a great resource.
Yes,
and for those that never have been there, what a treat they're in store for.
Yes, that is so true. And right now there's a lot going on at the Arboretum. We are awaiting the opening of the Apple House, which is going to happen this coming Thursday, August 26th. The Apple House will be open with the first apples, the first harvest of the season. That's always an exciting time. This weekend, August 20th through 22nd, is Art in the Gardens. And this is a wonderful number of many vendors that are showing and selling their art. So fabulous time to see that. And of course, the gardens are beautiful, the annuals, the prairies blooming, the hydrangea collection. If you love hydrangeas, this is the time to go see the big display at the Arboretum. So wonderful to walk around. And we do still have admission. You need to go online to get admission and get your tickets, time tickets. But plenty of openings, really. Any half hour you want to go today or in the next 2 weeks should be easy to get your admission ticket.
Oh, you're going to love it. And if as far as folks who have never been there, the quick directions, quick intersection, Mary.
Yes, it's just west of the intersection of 5 and 41. Now, there is some construction on 41 south. But if you're coming from the Minneapolis area, just head west on Route 5. That is totally open, and you'll see the entrance sign for the Arboretum just west of intersection of 5 and 41.
Yeah, very easy to find. Was just there the other day. Here is a question about deadhead. When's the best time to deadhead peonies and the best time to cut them back in the fall?
I deadhead my peonies right after they're done blooming, and I cut them back in the fall once the foliage starts to die back or if you have a lot of botrytis blight. Now, my peonies so far this year are nice and green, no sign of disease, but if you have any signs of disease, you remove that foliage and take it out from the peonies. I think the drier conditions have reduced botrytis blight, but cleaning up the peonies in the fall is a good idea to remove their foliage.
Okay.
But once it starts to turn yellow, I wait till that time.
Okay, very good. This listener says, when I was picking raspberries in my backwoods a month ago, I saw a thorn plant I've never seen before with five leaves. I have identified, a texter says, as Himalayan raspberry. Is it good or bad for Minnesota? What should I do with it?
I would have to look that up and see Himalayan raspberry. There are a number of other raspberries that, actually, some that are native further north and up into Canada, but I would have to look up exactly what that is. And you can take a picture of plants. There are apps now that will help you identify plants, but it's really critical that you make sure exactly what the plant is, especially if you're thinking about eating it.
Okay.
So that is, yeah, you've got to have a definitive knowledge of what that is.
Right, Mary, here's another one. It says, when is the what rather is the best way to care for fall potted mums?
Well, fall potted mums are a great plant to buy. They give us a lot of color and beautiful bloom, and many garden centers will start selling them now and have them for fall displays. I think the most important thing is to keep them well watered, whether they're in a container or you take them out of the container and actually plant them in the ground. You have to think about watering them. You can keep them blooming if you deadhead them and take off the flowers after they bloom. And there are many mums that are hardy in Minnesota, and these are a little bit harder to find, but most of them are really just grown as annuals. But I would say give them a good light conditions and keep them well watered.
All right. How long, this Dexter says, do gold flame spirea live? Ours is in clay soil since 1987. Some are getting pretty woody looking, with fewer leaves. What do you think?
How long do they live? Well, a long time. Yeah, gold flame. I'd have to look up gold flame and see that particular cultivar. But shrubby spireas can live a long time. And sometimes people don't like the look of them. They do tend to, right, as this texture says, they get woody looking. You can cut spirea back down to the ground, and they will almost always grow up again from the base and have new growth. And when I had spireas, I was kind of pruning them every year, taking out the older, deader wood to try to rejuvenate them. But they do respond well to pruning, and I would try that. If the thing is, I would do it after it flowers in the spring. This time of year, cutting it back is not a good time to do it for a spirea. I would do it after it blooms in the spring.
Okay, very good. When does one transplant golden raspberry plants? Can they be planted near red raspberries and blackberries?
Yes, I would do that in the spring also. In the fall, you might be able to get away with it doing it now in the fall. You'd really have to keep on watering it, and you want 4 to 6 weeks of time when the roots can reestablish before winter. So that would be, yeah, now in early September, you could do the transplanting. It's okay if they're near other raspberries. You will still get your true golden raspberries. The only thing you have to be careful about is that to have good air circulation around them, room and space for them all to grow. And then if there is an insect or disease problem, it can transfer more easily if they're closer together. So keeping them in different spots on your property might be a good idea as long as they're all in full sun.
This might be a point too, Mary, when we mention the university's website. There's so many great pieces of information there. I was looking at this text that says they're looking for a Minnesota hardy perennial grass to use as a garage foundation planting with north and west exposure. I've used that website looking for shrubs or trees, for that matter, or besides going to the Arboretum. But the university website, extension.umn.edu, is a tremendous resource. A lot of good work put into that.
Yes, and there's always new things that are posted on the website. I was just reading a new publication.
Weekdays 7:40 and 8:40.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to the help you get from Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, helping you out today via text 651-989-9226. And Mary, as usual, we have no shortage of text questions for you. But especially when you and your colleagues are on, we always like to bring up the topic of the Arboretum. It is such a great resource.
Yes, Denise.
And for those that never have been there, what a treat they're in store for.
Yes, that is so true. And right now there's a lot going on at the Arboretum. We are awaiting the opening of the Apple House, which is going to happen this coming Thursday, August 26th. The Apple House will be open with the first apples, the first harvest of the season. That's always an exciting time. This weekend, August 20th through 22nd, is Art in the Gardens. And this is a wonderful number of many vendors that are showing and selling their art. So fabulous time to see that. And of course, the gardens are beautiful. The annuals, the prairies blooming, the hydrangea collection. If you love hydrangeas, this is the time to go see the big display at the Arboretum. So wonderful to walk around. And we do still have admission. You need to go online to get admission and get your tickets, time tickets, but plenty of openings. Really, any half hour you want to go today or in the next 2 weeks should be easy to get your admission ticket.
Oh, you're going to love it. And if, as far as the folks who have never been there, the quick directions, quick intersection, Mary.
Yes, it's just west of the intersection of 5 and 41. Now, there is some construction on 41 south, but if you're coming from the Minneapolis area, just head west on Route 5. That is totally open, and you'll see the entrance sign for the Arboretum just west of intersection of 5 and 41.
Yeah, very easy to find. It was just there the other day. Here is a question about deadhead. When's the best time to deadhead peonies and the best time to cut them back in the fall?
I deadhead my peonies right after they're done blooming, and I cut them back in the fall once the foliage starts to die back, or if you have a lot of botrytis blight. Now, my peonies so far this year are nice and green, no sign of disease, but if you have any signs of disease, you remove that foliage and take it out from the peonies. I think the drier conditions have reduced botrytis blight, but cleaning up the peonies in the fall is a good idea to remove their foliage.
Okay.
But once it starts to turn yellow, I wait till that time.
Okay, very good. This listener says, when I was picking raspberries in my backwoods a month ago, I saw a thorn plant I've never seen before with five leaves. I have identified, a texter says, as Himalayan raspberry. Is it good or bad for Minnesota? What should I do with it?
I would have to look that up and see Himalayan raspberry. There are a number of other raspberries that, actually some that are native further north and up into Canada, but I would have to look up exactly what that is. And you can take a picture of plants. There are apps now that will help you identify plants, but it's really critical that you make sure exactly what the plant is, especially if you're thinking about eating it.
Okay.
So that is, yeah, you have to have a definitive knowledge of what that is.
All right, Mary, here's another one. It says, what is the best way to care for fall potted mums?
Well, fall potted mums are a great plant to buy. They give us a lot of color and beautiful bloom. And many garden centers will start selling them now and have them for fall displays. I think the most important thing is to keep them well watered. Whether they're in a container or you take them out of the container and actually plant them in the ground, you have to think about watering them. You can keep them blooming if you deadhead them and take off the flowers after they bloom. And there are many mums that are hardy in Minnesota, and these are a little bit harder to find, but most of them are really just grown as annuals. But I would say give them a good light conditions and keep them well watered.
All right. How long, this Dexter says, do gold flame spirea live? Ours is in clay soil since 1987. Some are getting pretty woody looking with fewer leaves. What do you think?
How long do they live? Well, a long time.
Yeah.
gold flame. I'd have to look up gold flame and see that particular cultivar. But shrubby spireas can live a long time. And sometimes people don't like the look of them. They do tend to, right, as this texture says, they get woody looking. You can cut spirea back down to the ground, and they will almost always grow up again from the base and have new growth. And when I had spireas, I was kind of pruning them every year, taking out the older, deader wood to try to rejuvenate them. But they do respond well to pruning. And I would try that. If the thing is, I would do it after it flowers in the spring. This time of year, cutting it back is not a good time to do it for a spirea. I would do it after it blooms in the spring.
Okay, very good. When does one transplant golden raspberry plants? Can they be planted near red raspberries and blackberries?
Yes, I would do that in the spring also. In the fall, you might be able to get away with it doing it now in the fall. You'd really have to keep on watering it. And you want 4 to 6 weeks of time when the roots can reestablish before winter. So that would be, now in early September, you could do the transplanting. It's okay if they're near other raspberries. You will still get your true golden raspberries. The only thing you have to be careful about is that to have good air circulation around them, room and space for them all to grow. And then if there is an insect or disease problem, it can transfer more easily if they're closer together. So keeping them in different spots on your property might be a good idea, as long as they're all in full sun.
This might be a point, too, Mary, when we mention the university's website. There's so many great pieces of information there. I was looking at this text that says they're looking for a Minnesota hardy perennial grass to use as a garage foundation planting with north and west exposure. I've used that website looking for shrubs or trees, for that matter, or besides going to the Arboretum. But the university website, extension.umn.edu, is a tremendous resource. A lot of good work put into that.
Yes, and there's always new things that are posted on the website. I was just reading a new publication about bee lawns and how to put in a bee lawn, pictures of the plants for a bee lawn. So there's lots of good information up there. We have our Yard and Garden newsletter, which comes out regularly with new information in. But what's wrong with my plant? What insect is this? What weed is this? We have tons of pictures up there to help you. And the information is really for the upper Midwest, and especially for Minnesota.
Absolutely. You can ask a master gardener as well, right?
Right. That's right. You can email a master gardener with pictures or with a question about gardening.
Yeah, check it out, extension.umn.edu. This text says this, Mary: my cucumbers have lots of blossoms on them but are not producing any cucumbers. What causes this? This is the second year this has happened.
Well, I would encourage you to plant several vines or plants of those cucumbers. Cucumbers have male and female flowers. So you're getting a lot of flowers, and those are the male ones with the pollen. But the ones that have the little cucumbers behind the actual flower, those are the female flowers. And we normally get a balance of both of those. But weather conditions can really affect the flowers, whether they're male or female ones that come out. And the only way you can assure to have a lot is to have several vines. Excuse me. So if you have, you know, three or four vines, if you have more rooms, have two or three different hills, a lot of vines equals more cucumbers.
Very good. This listener says this, Mary, when putting cut flowers in a vase, I've heard an aspirin in water makes them last longer. Is that true?
Well, an aspirin changes the acidity of the vase. And you can try that as a home remedy. The best thing to do is use the preservatives that are in packets where you buy flowers, in a grocery store, in a florist, garden center, and so on. Those preservatives really work. They are scientifically proven. There's been a lot of research on that. They're a combination of ingredients that preserve the life of cut flowers. So the best thing is use those packets. They're almost always free, and they come with any purchase of flowers in the grocery stores.
Yeah, very good. All right, I tell you what, I'm being signaled, Mary. Time to take a quick break. We have more Smart Garden Show to come here on CCO. By the way, around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, welcoming your text questions at 651-989-9226. Back with more here on CCO. Stay with us. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO from the University of Minnesota. Mary Meyer is answering your lawn and garden questions today. Here's one for you, Mary. When is the best time to transplant rhubarb? They really appreciate the program.
Rhubarb is a great plant for us in the northern part of the country, and in Minnesota, it does like cool weather conditions. My rhubarb looks terrible right now. It is laying down on the ground, and the heat, it doesn't like heat. So it's been a tough year for it. I would say you could transplant rhubarb anytime. It is that tough, and you might not get many stalks as much to harvest for the first year afterwards. You could go ahead and do that right now. It's a big root, and so you'll probably think you got it all and then find you didn't get it all because there's stumps still growing there. But keep it well watered, and as long as you can do it in the fall now when it has a month of time. In the spring, it's vigorously growing, an excellent time to do it in the spring, but you can get by in the fall as well.
Mary, this listener says, can I start a new hydrangea plant from an existing limelight plant? If so, how and what time of year?
Well, I think the easiest way to do this is what's called layering. And if possible, if you have a stem that's low enough to the ground, you bend that stem and bury part of the stem in the ground. Now, where the leaves are coming out of the stem is where roots will come out. So if you bury part of the stem, it will actually root on its own there in the ground. I have a vanilla strawberry hydrangea that has layered itself around the shrub where it's growing. So sometimes plants will do this on their own. I've got a Meyer lilac that's done the same thing. But if there's a branch low enough, bend it down, cover it with soil, maybe put a pin or something in there, something to hold the branch down, a rock on it. And in a year or two, you'll have another plant there.
Here's an interesting one, Mary. It says, we live just north of Watertown, Minnesota. All of our pears have disappeared, neighbors as well. No cores or remainders. So what happened to all of our pears? It's
oh,
a pear
God.
Thief.
A pear thief. I think this is probably wildlife, animals, squirrels, chipmunks coming in and taking them off the tree. Because of the drier conditions, again, this is fruit that's resource for wildlife. So, yeah, squirrels, I don't know. These squirrels, they get so used to us and the food we're providing for them that I have squirrels on my Zestar apple tree, harvesting them. They're on the ground. Then the squirrels are eating them from the ground. So I would expect wildlife is what happened. What
Probably so. Yeah, you would think. This listener wants to know what's happening with my magnolia shrub, a black substance in the leaves that rubs off on my hands.
Yes, this is the dreaded magnolia scale. This is a big problem insect, and I know people who have removed their magnolia shrubs and given up trying to control the scale. So we have a good information sheet on this online, and you really need to read about the treatment. There are a couple times of year you can treat it. One is now in the fall. That insect is all along the stem, and it's just a really hard insect to control. So there's treatment in the fall of the year, there's treatment in the spring, there's oil sprays, as well as systemic insecticides that you put on the soil and the plants take up. So it's quite an endeavor to control the magnolia scale. So read up about it, and then make a decision whether or not you want to tackle that, or if it's really bad, you might consider planting something else. As much as I love magnolias, that's something you have to consider. It's quite a job to take care of the scale.
Here's a question, Mary, I think a lot of us have. It says, I have some large patches of dead grass due to the drought. Is it best to till it up now and plant seed, or wait until later this fall, or wait until spring? And what about laying down sod instead?
Well, fall is our time for planting seed and doing sodding, lawn renovation and everything. And our typical dates, we have started them now from August 15th to September 15th is typically the best time to do this. The one thing you have going for you is you don't have as many weed seeds germinating or weeds growing, but you will have to really put the water on because we have had so little rain and there's so little rain in the forecast. So if I were you, I would wait till closer to September 1st and see if we don't get into a better rainfall pattern then. The other good thing is that although we have low rain, we are predicted to have above normal temperatures this fall. So maybe we will have a longer growing season going into the fall. So any seed you plant now will have a longer time to get established.
So there might be good news after all, after this drought.
A little bit.
It's just a little bit, yeah. For the past 2 years, this listener said, Mary, I've been trying to grow morning glories in a large planter where they get lots of sun. They're healthy, green, no flowers. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I've got the same thing. I've got this giant twirly vine, as one of my grandkids calls the morning glory. It's amazing how big and fast it grows. It's a short day plant. Most morning glories are short days, so we have to wait till the days are consistently short. They're getting shorter now, but they really start getting shorter after mid-September. So you will see the flowers come on that, but that is one disadvantage. With most of the morning glories grown from seed, they only flower with short days.
All right, there is a Japanese beetle question I see here. Is milky spore effective for treating those beetles?
For years, we thought the answer to that was yes, but now there's some debate as to whether or not that's an effective treatment. You can try it, but you still may have Japanese beetles because they fly in from somewhere else, and they are hard to control. We have, again, great information about the Japanese beetles on the extension.umn.edu website. The best thing is to try to control them early. The first ones you see, try to keep them from attracting others. Early in the morning, hand pick or hand clean them off. Japanese beetles are a nuisance, and normally they're not fatal to any plant they get on, but they are definitely a problem, and there certainly can be a lot of them. Now, this time of year, they're starting to decline because you get into August, the adults have mated, they're laying their eggs in the ground, in the soil, and they're dying. So we're going to see less adults every day now as we go into fall.
Okay. I have a couple of minutes to go on the show, Mary. Here's one. It says, does the advice for waiting until fall for pruning apply to mature trees as well? Our large Norway maple needs trimming away from the house, and we're wondering if we should wait as well.
Norway maple. Yes, the advice now really is to wait because trees are under a great deal of stress. And Norway maple is a tough tree. I would guess, you know, hopefully we will get more rain and trees will be less stressed. The other thing is the Norway maple, obviously deciduous, it's going to drop its leaves in another month or two, but the longer you keep the leaves on, the more food resources it has the potential to make. So if it isn't a hazardous branch or anything, I would wait a few more weeks.
Okay. Can an air root from an orchid grow roots and thus a new plant?
Maybe. Maybe. The aerial roots that are on orchids are really kind of, they're epiphytes. So they tend to be air plants where they are native. Growing another plant from them, theoretically that is right. I don't know anybody that's done that on a home basis. You know, a commercial grower could divide an orchid and get them going. They use tissue culture. They use some other more complicated ways. So I don't know. That's the kind of thing. Maybe you can find a YouTube video on that.
Hey, there you go.
It's really amazing what you can find.
It's amazing.
On YouTube videos.
Yes. Yeah, some good, some not so good.
Great videos. But... Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, Mary,
that would be tricky.
It would be, yeah, but it might be worth a try. But and then let us know if you're successful. Well, Mary, we have to run. Thank you so much. And I want to urge folks to get on the university website. That's umn.edu. It's extension.umn.edu. What was that again?
Yes.
Extension.umn.edu.
Always a pleasure.
And my pleasure as well. Thank you, Mary, and we'll talk soon. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, and get to the Arboretum. Also, get those deck questions ready because coming up next hour, Luke Panic, the deck expert from Linda's Construction, will be filling in for Andy. So keep that in mind and call, text in those questions next hour. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, where it's 66 degrees. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO from the University of Minnesota. Mary Meyer is answering your lawn and garden questions today. Here's one for you, Mary. When is the best time to transplant rhubarb? They really appreciate the program.
Rhubarb is a great plant for us in the northern part of the country, and in Minnesota, it does like cool weather conditions. My rhubarb looks terrible right now. It is laying down on the ground, and the heat, it doesn't like heat. So it's been a tough year for it. I would say you could transplant rhubarb anytime. It is that tough. And you might not get many stalks as much to harvest for the first year afterwards. You could go ahead and do that right now. It's a big root. And so you'll probably think you got it all and then find you didn't get it all because there's stumps still growing there. But keep it well watered. And as long as you can do it in the fall now when it has a month of time. In the spring, it's vigorously growing and excellent time to do it in the spring. But you can get by in the fall as well.
Mary, this listener says, can I start a new hydrangea plant from an existing limelight plant? If so, how and what time of year?
Well, I think the easiest way to do this is what's called layering. And if possible, if you have a stem that's low enough to the ground, you bend that stem and bury part of the stem in the ground. Now, where the leaves are coming out of the stem is where roots will come out. So if you bury part of the stem, it will actually root on its own there in the ground. I have a vanilla strawberry hydrangea that has layered itself around the shrub where it's growing. So sometimes plants will do this on their own. I've got a Meyer lilac that's done the same thing. But if there's a branch low enough, bend it down, cover it with soil, maybe put a pin or something in there, something to hold the branch down, a rock on it. And in a year or two, you'll have another plant there.
Here's an interesting one, Mary. It says, we live just north of Watertown, Minnesota. All of our pears have disappeared, neighbors as well. No cores or remainders. So what happened to all of our pears? It's a pear thief.
A pear thief. I think this is probably wildlife, animals, squirrels, chipmunks coming in and taking them off the tree. Because of the drier conditions, again, this is fruit that's resource for wildlife. So, yeah, squirrels, I don't know. These squirrels, they get so used to us and the food we're providing for them that I have squirrels on my Zestar apple tree, harvesting them. They're on the ground. Then the squirrels are eating them from the ground. So I would expect wildlife is what happened. What
Probably so. Yeah, you would think. This listener wants to know what's happening with my magnolia shrub, a black substance in the leaves that rubs off on my hands.
Yes, this is the dreaded magnolia scale. This is a big problem insect, and I know people who have removed their magnolia shrubs and given up trying to control the scale. So we have a good information sheet on this online, and you really need to read about the treatment. There are a couple times of year you can treat it. One is now in the fall. That insect is all along the stem, and it's just a really hard insect to control. So there's treatment in the fall of the year, there's treatment in the spring, there's oil sprays, as well as systemic insecticides that you put on the soil and the plants take up. So it's quite an endeavor to control the magnolia scale. So read up about it and then make a decision whether or not you want to tackle that, or if it's really bad, you might consider planting something else. As much as I love magnolias, that's something you have to consider. It's quite a job to take care of the scale.
Here's a question, Mary, I think a lot of us have. It says, I have some large patches of dead grass due to the drought. Is it best to till it up now and plant seed, or wait until later this fall, or wait until spring? And what about laying down sod instead?
Well, fall is our time for planting seed and doing sodding, lawn renovation and everything. And our typical dates, we have started them now from August 15th to September 15th is typically the best time to do this. The one thing you have going for you is you don't have as many weed seeds germinating or weeds growing, but you will have to really put the water on because we have had so little rain and there's so little rain in the forecast. So if I were you, I would wait till closer to September 1st and see if we don't get into a better rainfall pattern then. The other good thing is that although we have low rain, we are predicted to have above normal temperatures this fall. So maybe we will have a longer growing season going into the fall. So any seed you plant now will have a longer time to get established.
So there might be good news after all, after this drought.
A little bit.
It's just a little bit, yeah. For the past 2 years, this listener said, Mary, Been trying to grow morning glories in a large planter where they get lots of sun. They're healthy, green, no flowers. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I've got the same thing. I've got this giant twirly vine, as one of my grandkids calls the morning glory. It's amazing how big and fast it grows. It's a short day plant. Most morning glories are short days, so we have to wait till the days are consistently short. They're getting shorter now, but they really start getting shorter after mid-September. So you will see the flowers come on that, but that is one disadvantage. With most of the morning glories grown from seed, they only flower with short days.
All right, there is a Japanese beetle question I see here. Is milky spore effective for treating those beetles?
For years, we thought the answer to that was yes, but now there's some debate as to whether or not that's an effective treatment. You can try it, but you still may have Japanese beetles because they fly in from somewhere else, and they are hard to control. We have, again, great information about the Japanese beetles on the extension.umn.edu website. The best thing is to try to control them early. The first ones you see, try to keep them from attracting others. Early in the morning, hand pick or hand clean them off. Japanese beetles are a nuisance, and normally they're not fatal to any plant they get on. But they are definitely a problem, and there certainly can be a lot of them. Now, this time of year, they're starting to decline because you get into August, the adults have mated, they're laying their eggs in the ground, in the soil, and they're dying. So we're going to see less adults every day now as we go into fall.
Okay. I have a couple of minutes to go on the show, Mary. Here's one. It says, does the advice for waiting until fall for pruning apply to mature trees as well? Our large Norway maple needs trimming away from the house, and we're wondering if we should wait as well.
Norway maple. Yes, the advice now really is to wait because trees are under a great deal of stress. And Norway maple is a tough tree, I would guess, hopefully we will get more rain and trees will be less stressed. The other thing is the Norway maple, obviously deciduous, it's going to drop its leaves in another month or two, but the longer you keep the leaves on, the more food resources it has the potential to make. So if it isn't a hazardous branch or anything, I would wait a few more weeks.
Okay. Can an air root from an orchid grow roots and thus a new plant?
Maybe. Maybe. The aerial roots that are on orchids are really kind of, they're epiphytes. So they tend to be air plants where they are native. Growing another plant from them, theoretically that is right. I don't know anybody that's done that on a home basis. A commercial grower could divide an orchid and get them going. They use tissue culture. They use some other more complicated ways. So I don't know. That's the kind of thing. Maybe you can find a YouTube video on that.
Hey, there you go.
It's really amazing what you can find.
It's amazing.
On YouTube videos.
Yes. Yeah, some good, some not so good.
Great videos. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, Mary,
that would be tricky.
It would be, yeah, but it might be worth a try. And then let us know if you're successful. Well, Mary, we have to run. Thank you so much. And I want to urge folks to get on the university website. That's umn.edu. It's extension.umn.edu. What was that again?
Yes.
Extension.umn.edu.
Always a pleasure.
And my pleasure as well. Thank you, Mary, and we'll talk soon. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, and get to the Arboretum. Also, get those deck questions ready because coming up next hour, Luke Panik, the deck expert from Linda's Construction will be filling in for Andy. So keep that in mind and call, text in those questions next hour. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, where it's 66 degrees.